Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Thursday, April 30th, 2026 to everybody. We're doing another pod. Nick is here with me, and we have a special guest who's now become a routine guest a little bit for us. That's Ryan Karchi of the LA Times. Ryan, thanks so much for joining us.
Happy to be here.
And we have special guest number two that you may hear in the background, which is my little baby daughter. So if you hear any squeaks or cries or anything, don't worry. It's just you're not hearing things, and it's definitely not any of the main participants on the podcast. That's someone else crying without permission. Nick, how have you been since we last on the podcast? I know we've done a couple of the spaces in the last few weeks. And it's been a very active kind of portal season for USC.
Yeah, Chase, I've been great. It's been a fun couple weeks here, seeing how the coaching staff has filled out the roster. And, you know, you combine that with just all the background noise of what's happening in college basketball between the potential fifth-year eligibility and seeing the roster construction of some of the other blue bloods, or lack of roster construction in one SEC team's case. And it's been kind of just fun to watch from afar, but been doing great.
Great, great. Well, Ryan, it's great to have you here because you've done probably, I mean, far and away the best reporting this offseason on USC basketball. We really appreciate you doing that, giving us some insights that weren't already available. I guess just start on the big picture. What are your kind of like global thought? You know, obviously USC coming off kind of a rough end of the season, losing eight in a row, I think. And, you know, time to rebuild, restructure a little bit. What are your thoughts, global thoughts on what you've seen over the last, I guess, now coming up on a month and a half?
Yeah, I've been really impressed so far with what Mas and his staff have been able to do, if only because, you know, coming into last season, it was kind of carte blanche, for lack of a better phrase. I mean, there wasn't a lot of like hemming and hawing about numbers when Mas and his staff wanted to go after someone. And I think we saw that like unchecked approach didn't work, or kind of, you know, may have worked 70 out of 100 times, but, you know, this happened to be one of the 30 that it didn't. So I think there was a realization coming out of that, like, we don't need to pay up for bench guys that we just happen to like. We can find, there's a lot of those guys around. And I think there's been a lot more careful spending as far as I've seen. Now, I don't know the exact figures, but, and everything is up just by an astronomical amount compared to what I expected. But it was just kind of an awkward market in the first place, given the fact that so many schools, all the blue bloods, you know, paid before the rev share era had started for this class or the previous class. So there wasn't really any checks on how much anyone could spend. And, you know, now there is, and yet we still see the market go up 65% or whatever it was that Evan Maya had reported. But, and I think in Mus's case, they found a way to work with that, which is impressive. And I think a big part of that is getting Rodney Rice back. I think that was the biggest move of the whole offseason. Obviously, getting Elijah Arenas back, too, is huge. But there's just something about the way this team worked when Rodney Rice was at the helm. I think we'll see just a lot more put together approach, you know, built around him and built around Elijah. And you just have a lot of guys that, you know, I think they set out to get, you know, rebounding and, you know, some size, and they needed some help in the backcourt, like defensively, and they got pretty much all of it that they wanted already. So obviously a lot still to do to fill out some of the spots. You saw Joshua Hughes added today from Evansville, but yeah, I overall, I've just been kind of impressed with the way they've gone about this, especially, given the fact that it had to kind of be dialed down and there was a little bit more scrutiny on, what was happening.
So, I mean, there's a lot to unpack there, a lot to unpack. Before we get to that, though, I wanted to, you also had the opportunity to speak with Evan Miakawa. You referenced that a little bit. You had an interview with him in one of your articles. Great. I think everyone really should look at what Ryan's recent articles for the Times. Certainly in this one, it was interesting. I pay for kind of an elevated information basis from Evan's platform. It's a very interesting platform. I think it's probably the one that you hear people talk about the most. And he does some work at trying to keep track of NIL numbers. The way he does that really is to try to entice agents and and coaches, and then the GM position, those people to subscribe to his kind of highest tier, and then have them enter in NIL numbers. Now those can't be verified, but he is able to see the year-over-year difference. And just kind of this information he's put out and the information he discussed with you is really interesting. What were your biggest takeaways from just speaking with Evan
Well,
or communicating with him?
I mentioned the 65% up. I thought I knew it would go up, even with the fact that, the budgets were going to be a little tighter, given there was no overlap with pre-rev share. But 65% is a lot. And also the other thing that really kind of blew my mind is just generally big men being an average of 1.3 million. It's just I think back to 2 years ago, and that would have just been we couldn't have even conceived of that. And obviously, markets change, and they get bigger. We see salary caps in every pro sport get bigger, but it's doubling almost every year. So that or every 2 years. So I don't know. I don't know it. I don't know where it goes. Like at a certain point, it just can't do that.
Yeah,
It's
it's
growing
it,
faster than the market actually is.
yeah, it's a very strange situation where basically the people doing NIL donors are kind of in the equivalent position of, let's say, a owner or minority owner of a sports franchise where you're not necessarily getting distributions. Now, those owners, if they sell the franchise, you might get a 600, 700, 800% return on your stock. Obviously, there's no such return like that in NIL dollars. But you're putting out a lot of money on a yearly basis to get these guys. I think clearly what happened is everyone kind of saw what was happening with the Final Four teams that, between Michigan, Arizona to a certain extent, definitely Illinois, these front courts, these kind of very dominant front courts were started to dominate other teams in the game, that you needed to be big at the rim. And the reaction to that was to just go on a spending spree for these big men, almost in a way, without regard to how successful they've been. And I'll just tell one little anecdote I think is kind of interesting. During the early, right around the time of the Final Four, I had a person who spoke directly with Mus, and I had a general idea that it was very important for Mus to re-sign Rodney Rice and Jacob Kofi, but also Gabe Dines. And at that point in time, I think Elijah Arenas was a little bit more of an uncertainty for a variety of reasons. And as we go through this process, I'm fairly sure what happened is that the plan was not necessarily to include Dines as a key man of, like, let's say, the eight-man rotation. Once they figured out that they had Eric Ribaugh coming in, and once they figured out that he wasn't necessarily going to be a key, key guy in that, let's say, top eight, then the USC just couldn't afford probably to match the offers. And if you look at Nick, you remember the initial list that Gabe Dines comes out with. I mean, it was like Blue Blood Central.
Yeah, Kansas was on there, Arizona was on there, and then obviously those two Kentucky schools, Louisville and Kentucky, and he ends up going to Louisville. And Chase, I have no idea if you have any information on what he got from Louisville, but obviously wasn't cheap, and I'm sure he'll have, some rotational role there.
Yeah, and I could tell you, I could tell you what Evan Miyakawa says that you should what it should be paid for a guy like Gabe Dines. And it's I mean, I don't want to degrade the guy because I think he's a really interesting defensive kind of weapon. But basically, you shouldn't, according, and this is with a 65% increase, mind you, and even like an uplift from there for the five man, you really shouldn't be spending more than $300,000, according to Evan Mia. This is his numbers, and this it calculates across the board. I mean, if you have Kentucky, Louisville, Kansas, Arizona, if they're all trying to get you, bringing you in for visits, trying to get you to go there, I guarantee you he's well above 300,000, and he, my guess is he hit the seven figure mark. I don't know that for sure, but just based upon all the information, Ryan, have you, did anyone ever talk to you about the Gabe Dines situation, and what's your thinking on that?
Yeah, all I really know is that they did want to bring him back. I think there was a, mutual interest in that. But I think, everything you had said is the same sort of thing that I had heard. Is just that, it's just too big of a, like, that's just not where, like, that's too much for Gabe Dines. No disrespect to Gabe at all. I think he has a lot of potential, but I think there were moments that, like, they were hoping he would hit his, like, reach that ceiling more last season, and it just didn't happen. So I don't know if it's going to happen. And Louisville, I mean, it's a that's if you're Louisville and you have, upwards of 40 million to or whatever to drop on basketball, then by all means. But I don't think USC was ever going to be in that position. And if anything, I think he probably was a little bit overpaid last year, just trying to, again, was it was sort of an overpay everyone, get the guys you want situation. And there probably wasn't even enough, and this is me speculating, there probably wasn't even enough money to keep him at that level, given the people that they wanted to add. So it was just not gonna fit for both sides. So I don't think there's any ill will or anything, but yeah, it ended in a way that I think they kind of thought at first that they were gonna be able to keep him. But again, that 1.3 million for an average big man, it's just, that's wild. Hello, you guys there?
We lose Chase.
Yeah, well, sorry, I muted myself because of my little daughter talking, and my apologies.
It's like, wow, they're speechless
You
after
won't believe
that.
the first of all, I was totally speechless, but I also had an amazing presentation of information that got lost to history. But I'll do my best to recreate it. I think I misspoke when I said 300,000. I think it's actually 200,000 is what Evan Miyakawa would put Dines at, which I'm
Which makes
sure,
sense. That
yeah.
actually makes sense.
That totally makes sense. Even, and that's obviously at an elevated level, right? But just to give you some kind of comp, the guy that we got today in the portal, Joshua Hughes from Evansville, Evan would also have him at just about $200,000. So they're almost identical as far as how Evan evaluates what the NIL should be. I did not hear any stories about Joshua Hughes taking visits to Louisville or to Kentucky or to Duke or any major blue bloods. So I think, I mean, this is part of this kind of targeted roster construction that we've undertaken. Hughes is Australian. We've brought in Brad Davidson, excuse me, Brad Davidson from Hawaii. He's Australian himself, to replace Todd Lee. And I was wondering when we'd get our first Australian player, and we finally got one. It's just it's I'm sure this is kind of like part of the calculation. I don't know what it will Joshua Hughes be more productive than Jane Brunell? I'm skeptical of that. And Brunell actually had moments where he was very productive, although his defense wasn't great. I'm not sure Hughes is going to play great defense. He's not probably as strong as Brunell. But he does seem to have a little bit of lift around the rim, which is good. from what I saw, but who knows? It's not like he certainly did not put up the same quality numbers that Brownell had put up at Samford, right? Nick, that's where Brownell had been.
Samford.
So I mean, I wouldn't expect some, huge kind of productivity, but if you trust kind of the numbers that Evan Miakala gives you, and you're like, well, you can pay $1 million for Gabe Dines or $200,000 for Joshua Hughes. I think in this environment, you kind of have to do the Hughes thing.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair, Chase. And one other point on Dines, and I think this goes back to portal timing. I mean, we've touched on it a bit on the pod, but like last year, we brought in Ryan Cornish late, and if you have money to deploy and there's a lack of talent in the portal, oftentimes these guys can get paydays late in the process. So I kind of wonder with Dines and Louisville if. Louisville was pursuing John Blackwell. He goes to Duke. Clearly, they still had money to spend. And from their perspective, it was probably okay. We're losing Sandra Frew. We've got Flory Badunga at the five. Might as well throw some money at a rotation big. But yeah, I mean, Hughes is interesting. Definitely not a very must-coded player. Must tends to prefer the like. Power athlete types that maybe lack the skill, but I think it's a decent fit with the roster, from the standpoint that roster does need shooting, and that's the obvious deficiency. So we'll see if he can do enough to get into the rotation, but to me seems just like a bench shooter with some size.
So Ryan, why don't you tell us, from you, because you've talked to people, in the program, up to the very top. I'm sure they're probably very happy about this offseason, the way things have gone. You kind of have this very interesting symmetry where you got your three key retentions, you have your three key McDonald's All-American freshman recruits, and you have these three key portal acquisitions. Now, obviously, we had a fourth today, but I think, we had the three kind of initial ones. What is your sense of the feeling from within the program and just from the standpoint of, kind of excitement, but also expectations?
I think there's a reluctance to kind of talk big picture about the class until it's done, right? But I think, Elijah was very much up in the air. Rodney, I think everyone sort of assumed he would come back, hoped he would come back. Kofi, even, he enters his name into the draft pool. And I don't think that was ever, maybe there were assumptions made that he could get a good grade out of that, but I think the wonder was like, was he going to come back here even if he pulled out of the draft pool? And I, there's just, I guess the point I'm trying to make is like, in the past things have gone wrong in these times when they could have gone one way or the other. It seemed like they all kind of went right so far in the portal. Maybe obviously there are certainly guys you want that you don't get, but in terms of getting Elijah back, having Rodney locked in somewhat early so that people in the portal know that Kofi comes back, then you upgrade at certain spots. I mean, I would argue, is it Ribe?
It's
I think
Ryba.
Ryba. Ryba's a huge improvement on Dines, I think. So I think like just some of the even the losses were replaced by what is seemingly better players, and just it sounds like this group is a smoother fit maybe for what Muss wants to play. Now maybe that's just me sort of speculating, but just feels like a lot of the things that have been problems in the past they addressed and they did that successfully. And I think, like I said at the top, like I just think it's a objectively impressive work in the portal. Now, I think like some people are jumping on the this is a top 10 team bandwagon. I think like people got very excited last year too, and then it didn't work out that way. So a lot can change. A lot is still to like be figured out, but it's definitely a good start, like objectively, I would say.
Yeah, I think that this, look, I think they had a plan and they executed it. They executed it almost to precision. We will have to see if the plan was the right plan. but it's hard to say that they're the execution on the plan that they selected with very targeted kind of rotational pieces was not executed the way they wanted it. It very much seemed like this is kind of what they were looking for. And it's funny, you would see in US and tweets would come out and some random player, USC has been interested in this player and all that. And really with the guys that they've taken from the portal, there was no advance warning on Jalen Cox, no advance warning on Joshua Hughes. And with KJ Lewis and Riba, the basically when SC was mentioned and was almost mentioned exclusively, it was a little bit different with Riba, but for people who really seemed to have information, it was like USC had essentially effectively locked those players completely in by the time they were, being discussed publicly. I mean, Lily said, Nick, that's my perception of how this has kind of gone.
Sorry, I was on mute. Definitely seen that way. Riba, you had the connection to with Rodney Rice Sr. So staff clearly has been doing their due diligence on these guys for quite a while, and seems like they hit on almost all the plan A's. I mean, was there a obvious plan A that they missed on? Hard to say, but not publicly at least.
Yeah, definitely not publicly. I don't know. Do you ever, Ryan, you might hear things that we didn't hear. Did you ever hear about a name, like a bigger, higher profile name player that USC was kind of serious about that just kind of fizzled on in during this cycle?
Not one that comes to mind. No.
Yeah.
And I think that's, especially last year, I feel like that was a huge part of it. They were finalists for everyone and missed out at the end, sort of thing. So again, I think it's just more, it feels more stable, I guess is probably a good way to put it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, and getting it's always nice when you can retain players from the previous team. The last
Turns
two,
out that helps,
it
I
does
guess.
help. It does help. I guess the magic number is supposed to be four, although I think going forward that number four retention is going to be reduced because I know how many teams are able to reduce to retain four players anymore. Like Illinois was able to do it. Purdue's able to do it, but Purdue basically in doing it, I don't think was able to bring in one kind of desired piece from the portal because they spent all of their money just on retentions. So yeah, it's very difficult to, I mean, you look at Michigan going into next season, I think they're not going to be a top five team, but they lost their three best players clearly. And they had to re they basically had to replace them with portal pieces. And I still think they're going to be a very, very good team, but they're not going to be a team that's like, oh, this team is bringing back six or seven guys from last season. That's just not going to be the norm anymore. And certainly, I think, I was totally wrong about this, and Nick was totally correct about it. I thought that because of rev share, that teams would spend much more money on retentions. We'd have less player, fewer players in the portal. And that just turned out not to be the case. And really where you saw it was that the kind of the end of the like kind of the bench players, like virtually across the board with very few exceptions. Every like power conference team, their entire non-starting group, players enter the portal. I mean, it was just like if you're not locked in to be a starter for the next season, you're right into the portal. I mean, there was just like no hesitation. And I think we saw that with someone like Amarian Dickerson, who I my understanding was he was very interested in coming back, thought he'd come back. And I think he just got the word from SC that like, look, we don't really project you necessarily to be a top eight guy in the rotation, and he was gone, and who can blame him? Now he's going to be at Grand Canyon. I think he'll play 30 minutes a game, which is awesome for him. But these guys, Jerry Easter moving now up to Oregon. I think that's a very interesting little move. He's could be he there are other guards at Oregon that are going to be he's going to be competing for time with. I don't know if he's going to get play more playing time at Oregon than he would have at USC. It's just hard to know. But guys are essentially, if you were not already slated to be like one of those top five guys, everybody just hopped in the portal this year. And it was great of USC to be able to kind of bring back these three key pieces. Something that definitely would not seem to have happened in the past. So, I mean, I think that's definitely the high point of the of the off season that we've seen so far. Ryan, have you
And
been paying?
Chase too,
Oh yeah, go
Chase,
ahead.
really fast, just on that point, like, even though the portal was still flush with talent this year, like it was very different from USC standpoint in that regard. I mean, even off the disappointing, first year's team, you kind of thought going into that offseason, at least I did, I thought there was a pretty realistic chance that Desmond Claude and Wesley Yates would come back, and those were kind of your guards that you wanted to project forward and build around. And neither of them came back. And just night and day with this offseason, where you get Rodney Rice back, and then you get the unexpected Elijah Arenas news that he comes back, because everybody thought coming into the year, surefire one and done, right? Like zero chance you would do a second year of college. So you get both those guys back, and then you combine that with the McDonald's All-American kids and the portal kids. It feels like such a different off season in that regard.
So let's, oh, actually, before we do this, I'm going to ask Ryan another kind of general category question. Ryan, have you been keeping up with kind of what some of these other programs have been doing when it comes to, their portal acquisitions? And I'm thinking a little bit of the situation in Kentucky. Have you kept up at all with that?
Not so much, to be totally honest with you, but
So, I mean,
vaguely.
Maybe Nick and I can talk a little bit about this because it's a very interesting situation where you now have, Kansas was able to secure Tyron Stokes, who's the number one overall player, although I think a big step down as number one overall player from the guys that we saw in the 2025 class, the guys that were freshmen this past season. He's kind of helping to, I think, get Kansas to maybe a level of a, I don't know, top 25 roster. I mean, I'm not sure where you think of that, Nick, but like the other biggest blue blood, Kentucky, has really struggled in this NIL era. They lost out on Christian Collins, but that was months ago. But apparently, this is a large part due to, I mean, some people are blaming Mark Pope, their head coach, but it's also part due to their media rights holder for the university, JMI, who apparently has some sort of exclusive right to negotiate NIL deals on behalf of the, any athlete connected to the university. I think that's because of the licensing, how the way the licensing works. And it's really prevented Kentucky from getting some of their top targets. So we've seen through this portal period, I mean, how many different guys, top guys in the portal, have gone to visit Kentucky, spend a day in Lexington, they do the whole dog and pony show, and the guy leaves and that's it. He commits somewhere else the next day. I mean, Nick, I don't know if you have thoughts on this.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think you really touched on it there. They're kind of leverage you right now, and you see, Rob Wright did it, Donnie Freeman did it, Stokes was clearly using them and had no interest in going to Kentucky. I actually saw that Stokes apparently signed his paperwork with Kansas like a month ago, and then visited Kentucky after that. I thought that was pretty interesting that that got reported, but. Yeah, there have been so many. You touch on it with Christian Collins, the high school guys. They did end up getting Zoom Diallo. He kind of seems like their big marquee add this offseason. But in a way, Chase, I think the fact that the NIL number for last year's roster, that going public hurt them because they just became a target this offseason, where everybody thinks that they have unlimited money. And yeah, I mean, it's going to be a really tough year for Mark Pope. Like, he'll be on the hot seat the entire season here, it seems like.
What a
Yeah,
difference
it's a
between.
real dance you have to play with these NIL numbers because, on the one hand, you don't want to get the reputation that you're a broke program, right? That you can't afford top guys. On the other hand, you don't want to get the reputation that you're just going to spend lavishly and kind of wildly, and that's what's happened with Kentucky. So I think it is very, I'm not saying we need to compare USC to Kentucky, certainly in basketball, but it's they're kind of an interesting case that we've seen and how NIL situations can get really bad and ugly if you're not really precise. And we're gonna have to see if USC's kind of precise approach turned out to work, and well, that's only, the this upcoming season will tell us that. We do have some questions everyone wanted to ask Ryan, you. But before we get to that too, any thoughts about the expansion of the NCAA tournament to 76 teams?
I hate it.
Well, that just goes without saying. I don't,
Yeah.
who's in favor of this?
Yeah, ESPN, I guess. Or sorry, not any of the rights holders. I guess maybe not ESPN. I'm thinking of bowl games, but yeah, the TV execs, I guess. Maybe, and you know, and I think it's actually even more of a shame. I was actually talking to Lindsey Gottlieb about this for women's basketball.
Oh, it's horrible.
It's just not. I mean, it's just more games. Like it's, I don't know. It doesn't even seem like the teams are in favor of it. The feeling, I guess, is like they better get more money out of payouts out of this because I
So the
just.
story I heard that's being Gary Parrish and Matt Norlander, who I think usually are pretty reliable guys, the story that they've heard is that this is really being pushed because all the litigation that the NCAA has handled has pushed their budgets to the limit. They don't have money. And just this expansion, because the primary source of NCAA revenue, for those that don't know, is the NCAA tournaments. Men's tournament, by the way. Because in college football, the NCAA has a very li historically has had a very limited role in college football. Like historically, you had the bowl system, and later on, as that evolved over the years, it was always being done by kind of groups of different universities, different conferences. The NCAA was never directly involved with the top, what is now called the FBS or Division 1A in football. So the NCAA derives almost no direct revenue from football, even though it's the biggest, money-making sport, obviously, for college. So they have to get all the money from this tournament. I mean, that's really, and they host it, they run it. I think most people think it's a great run event. It's maybe the best event in sports as far as for American sports. So I guess the thinking of just being able to add effectively, eight more games. We're going from 68 teams to 76 teams, right? So that's eight additional games. Will provide enough of a boost in revenue to pay for some of these lawsuits or the defense of some of these lawsuits. That's what they're saying. I mean, it's hard to believe that's the case. Apparently, the way it's going to be structured is now we're going to get instead of a first four, it's going to be a first what? First 12. And I guess it's going to be pretty much the same model, which is a whole all the outlaw. And in the first four as we currently have it, the 16 seeds play each other, and then four of the last at-large teams play each other. Now apparently it's going to be this those four 16 seeds, and then 2 15 seeds will play each other, and then all the other games will be the at-large teams. So essentially, it's going to be the teams that would not have otherwise made it in. That we're going to be playing this play-in game. Okay, fair enough. But still, I mean, those Tuesday, Wednesday games are barely watched by anyone. Some of them are dreadful. There's not much of an audience there. I mean, there's a thousand reasons to hate this. But Nick, I was surprised to learn how in favor of this you were. So maybe you can defend it.
Yeah, not much to add from what Ryan touched on, but the NCAA angle that does make sense from a money standpoint. I guess maybe one positive is do you see more competitive non-conference games if you're like a maybe projected bubble team? Are you willing to challenge yourself and put your neck out there more? I don't know. I guess the flip side of that is if you do see that, then maybe we get sub 500 teams making the NCAA tournament. I mean, Auburn was awfully close this year as a barely above 500 team. So, wonder if we could we could ever get a sub 500 team in there.
I think it's definitely possible. And Ryan, going back to the other point on women's basketball, I mean, a couple really important things to note about this. First of all, the women's tournament is not kind of the glitz experience for the women that the men have for their tournament. I mean, I think it's gotten better in recent years, but
It has,
you
but
know, it's kind of been notorious for being underfunded. It does not generate a ton of revenue, so it's essentially operates at a loss. It operates at a loss with 64 teams, with 68 teams, and now we're going to expand it to 76 teams. So operating at a loss is kind of an interesting decision to do that. But more importantly, in the women's game, there is not nearly the same level of parity. So if you were to go back and look at, let's say, the last 10 to 12 Final Fours on the women's side, what you're going to see is the about, I think, at least half of the Final Four teams were one seeds, maybe more. I think almost all of them were one, two, or three seeds. It's extraordinarily rare for a non-top three seed to make the Final Four on the women's side. Now, this is becoming more the norm on the men's side too, as we're starting to see some of these super teams. So maybe that will take over on the men's side as well. But on the women's side, it's you usually have this, like, there's a clear, bright line that separates, the top five, six teams from like everybody else. And you see a very steep drop off after you get to a certain point. It's not like there, I think 2 years ago when USC, did USC win the regular season or UCLA won the regular season for Big Ten 2 years ago with Juju's last year? I can't remember how which way that went, but
USC won the regular season,
USC
yeah.
won the regular season,
UCLA
right?
won the title.
And I think, what did USC only, I think, and UCLA finished second, right?
Yeah.
So you've seen across the board how the West Coast schools have struggled in all these other sports and playing in the Big Ten. But in women's basketball, you have the two LA teams essentially running through just running through the conference when they've been strong. And I think between the two of them, I don't know, they might have lost 4 or 5 games. And I think two of those were to each other. It just they weren't super competitive after the top. And certainly as you drop down a little bit, it's not very competitive. When USC was an 8 seed or a 9 seed this year, and then they had to play South Carolina in the second round, the odds that an 8 USC, even a USC that's an 8, beating South Carolina, I mean, I don't know what they put
They
the
were
odds
20
at.
point underdogs.
Yeah, I mean, I would have said, make it 30. I mean, the chances of them winning are just so remote, completely different than some of the times you see some of these. Texas made a run into the Sweet 16 this year. Did they make the Elite Eight or not? Maybe just the Sweet 16, but as a play-in team, and you see that on the women's side, you just don't have the same amount of parity. So adding all these extra teams that aren't going to, they're, I mean, they're not going to have a factor at all in the tournament at the, in the, past the first couple rounds. Now, maybe it's just exciting for the women to be in this event, and I guess you can see that argument made, but it's
That's a
considering.
bad faith argument if the executives are making
Yeah,
that. They're
exactly.
not thinking about that.
Yeah, I mean, in the women's tournament, really, you should make the argument for contraction, right? Let the top 16 teams play
Absolutely.
a tournament, and then everybody else plays in, another tournament, and that can be fun for them, but going into a tournament and knowing that you have absolutely no, you could be a 6 seed and knowing you have absolutely no chance you would make the Final Four. I mean, essentially on the women's side, it's just a very difficult proposition. Now we're going to add more teams. It seems so bizarre.
Yeah, I have been a firm believer in all sports that we play too many games. Like I've been on a just rage-filled tirade against bowl games for over a decade now. And it feels like that's what they're doing here. Expanding it for the minimal financial gain while watering down the product and slowly eroding the public's trust in the event. And that's just what's happening. I mean, you don't see a single consumer who's happy about this. Maybe like a basketball obsessive who's just super excited about having some extra games, I guess. But even the gamblers, or like the casual gamblers that you rope in, that's like Christmas for casual gamblers. Like brackets, like you're gonna have 6 games that are just like unpicked. There's going to be like a lot of blank spots on your bracket just right before. I don't know. It's just going to be awkward for everyone. The
Yeah,
teams
then.
don't want it. The players don't want it. Like, I don't know.
Right. And then, even if you look at the professional level, right, like they're not adding games in the NBA or the MLB, but, you look at the NBA product this year and there's a huge argument for contraction of the NBA regular season. So,
Yes.
you know, going the other way on that in college, I mean, it just I don't know, just kind of crazy.
And I'm one of those basketball fanatics when it comes to college, but you don't have to play the game, those teams within an NCAA tournament. You can play them in the Crown tournament, which is like a little, oh, this is interesting. You know, if I want to watch, you know, it's not the greatest teams in the world, but it's kind of a fun little experience to watch the Crown play. Or if you want to watch the NIT play, you know, it's just kind of alternative viewing. Just to throw these teams in a one and done situation into the NCAA tournament just seems so stupid.
Even
But
let the NCAA have a secondary tournament. Give them
yeah,
another one that they
exactly.
can make money off of. Like, just
Right.
leave this one alone.
Yeah. Well, I think they used to own the NIT. I don't know. I guess they decided they couldn't make any money with the NIT. Okay. So here are some questions. Someone asked if we could project our starting lineups. I'm gonna for basketball's starting five. Ryan, do you have any thoughts on that?
Oh man, it's tough because I feel like it could go a number of ways. Because I don't think it's crazy that you could, you know, well, let me think. Rodney Rice, obviously, Elijah, and KJ Lewis, I would think if you can go with the three guard lineup there. I don't know, it's tough because you have Christian Collins and you have Riba and you have, you know, one of the Ratliff twins, maybe. Maybe the Ratliff twins come off the bench. Obviously, Riba is going to be the starting five, and Kofi. God, I forget about Kofi too, always. It's hard to find a starting five. But I would think Riba, Kofi, Rice, Arenas are probably locked in. And then I would think Christian Collins I'd probably throw in there.
Where are you at, Nick?
Yeah, I think for me, I'd pencil in Riba, pencil in Rice, and pencil in Kofi. And then I'd have KJ Lewis at the two. And then for me, I think it's, you know, Elijah and Christian Collins kind of at that three spot. And, you know, I think Mus probably will lean Elijah because he's the returner. But it would be kind of wild to have all three of the McDonald's All-Americans coming off the bench.
It would, and but I think that's what's going to. Well, yeah, the McDonald All-American freshman, or we have the
Freshman,
two
right.
we have the two McDonald's All-American sophomores. So
That's right.
I guess,
I also think you could see that lineup change over the course of the year, just
yeah,
given, you know, if Christian Collins comes along, if he doesn't start at first, by the end of
yes,
the year, he could be switched.
100%, 100% agree, 100% agree. Okay, well, he also asked us to predict our conference record and overall record, but I'm gonna save that because my intention is to have Ryan back on the podcast at some later date before we start the season. So we'll do that then. I think it's too early. We don't even have a full lineup yet. Plus, we don't know what other teams are gonna. I mean, Oregon added Dwayne Aristotle today, which really surprised me. Apparently, they had, you know, money set aside for Stokes, and they gave it to Aristotle, is my guess is what happened. Okay, but this is a good question. For Ryan in particular, what is it like to cover and interact with Coach Muss?
Muss has been pretty great to the LA media, I would say. I think, like, man, how do I say this? He is like very passionate, and I have always enjoyed the conversations about basketball with him, and he's willing to have them, which is not always something that a basketball coach will do with a journalist. So that is really cool. I prefer like a coach who can just like talk to you like a human being, and he definitely does that. So, which is more than you can say for certainly some coaches I have covered at USC. But no, he's been very helpful and good to me and fair, which is all I can really ask, you know. So, and I think he's a good coach, and I think this year is going to be a really interesting one in terms of his future at USC and maybe even his relationship with the media and like where everything goes, because you know the women's team is going to have such attention around it. He really needs to strike this weekend or this season. He kind of needs the media, and I think you know I'm always happy to talk to him about that. Certainly.
Another question is, and I don't know if you know the answer to this. I have some thoughts. How active has the program been in reaching out to former USC basketball players?
I don't know that well enough to answer for sure, but I know that Muss's certainly passionate about bringing people in to talk to the team. And I know some of those have been former players, so I can't really say for sure, like compared to other people.
I do know that I think this season, right, they honored the Elite Eight team with Sam Clancy and Brian Scalabrine and David Bluthenthal, Jeff Trepanier and Brandon Granville. Was that this season, Nick, or last season?
I think it was
Last
this
season.
season.
Yeah, I think. So, you definitely see a little bit of, those guys around a little bit, which is interesting. You see Nick Young is connected obviously to Gilbert Arenas, so he's around here and there.
He is, and Nick's always it always seems like he's around. Like you know that guy just loves USC.
One guy I don't know if I ever see him around. Like a lot of our kind of notable alumni are still kind of in the NBA or trying to be in the NBA. Obviously J-Mac is still there. I think Chimezie is now out of the NBA. I think I saw him at a game this year, if I could be mistaken about that. DeMar DeRozan was at the McDonald's All-American game, which actually was out here in Phoenix, so I got to see him there. I mean, it's a little bit tough for him to be, coming to USC games, but he's definitely an LA guy through and through. You see some football players. I mean, I think, Caleb Williams was at a game. So I'm not sure, but Musk seems to make a big deal on social media whenever he can get some athlete, to take a picture with him or do something on video with him. So I'm assuming they try to reach out and get those guys involved to the extent they can. All right, well, those were the main questions, I guess. Nick, do you have questions for Ryan?
Ryan, to the extent that you know about just the NIL and the budget situation, it definitely seems like the budget did increase from last year, as it did throughout college basketball. But it does seem like it was still pretty sizable last year compared to the rest of the sport. So I don't know if you have any insight on kind of what that looks like or what that looked like last year.
You mean in terms of relative to the other sports, or
Just more in terms of like USC's standing in the college basketball world, NIL wise.
yeah, and this is, more putting together pieces than having been told explicitly, but I've never gotten the sense that at least anyone is disappointed at like the how much they have right now. Now, like, I don't think they're gonna be ever really on the level of, some other big name blue blood ba college basketball teams. But this season, this off season is actually, I think, like a perfect test case for how they may sort of view this going forward, because now things have normalized. There's not like the rev share, like deadline situation now. Well, normalized, I guess, in air quotes, but. I think they understand that the whole picture, I guess, is like obviously football is always going to play in first, but there's not a ton of money to go around, so you need to like really be selective. And I think with USC basketball in particular, it's always going to be in a place that it's going to be able to spend, but like never, I don't imagine that it's ever going to be in a place, at least right now, that it can spend like with the Louisvilles and the, in the 40 million range right now or whatever it is. So that strategy can work, and I think it looks like it's working now. It didn't work last year, and I think that's because the margin for error just becomes so much thinner. But I think that's kind of the reality of where they're going to be, at least right now. That's kind of the status quo. So if you hit on that margin for error, you're always going to have enough to pay those players, like we see this year. Like, I don't think they're not hurting for money to pay everyone. But if a couple of those big paid players go wrong, suddenly there's not really like the bat, you didn't pay a Gabe Dines $1 million to come be on the bench, So suddenly things can get bad faster. And I think that's probably going to be the reality for a lot of teams in USC's situation. And I think athletic departments are approaching it differently depending on where you're at. Like SEC schools have different needs and stuff. Like they're spending a lot more on like their baseball teams than USC is. But basketball, I feel like it's gotten to a better place than it was. And it's in a healthy spot. I think anyone would probably tell you that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes total sense. And then one more for you as well. It seemed like when Musk came in a couple of years ago, there was a very concerted effort to reach out to the fan base and connect with the media and have a very open program. And maybe that wasn't as much the case last year, but I don't know if you're sensing that from your end, and if you have any thoughts on that, moving forward into the next year here.
No, I agree. And I think he would admit that there wasn't the same effort. And I think that, and he's now said that twice. So I think like he does need to deliver on that a little bit more, but like it's tough. I sympathize with him in that you really just gotta win. Like, or just like have a star player. And I know they've had star players and it hasn't done that. But it's really just that simple, and I feel like, yeah, that's I think people will come then. Now, like, I don't know, did Lindsey Gottlieb like go to frats and stuff when they had like a huge attendance boost? No, she just had Juju Watkins, right? So that helps. I mean, it's gonna be it's not Juju Watkins don't grow on trees, so that's not an easy strategy to follow, but I think it's a mix of things. I think he can do more. I think USC can do more just in general. I think fans need to like show up. I don't know. At a certain point, I think it's on the fans to some degree that they need to come out and show more support for this program. At least that's been my take from the years I've covered it. But yeah, I think all these things, people will come if they start to win. And I do think Muss is aware, at least, that he needs to do, and they need to do a little bit more, maybe coming into this season. And now that they feel in a more stable spot, maybe they will sort of have the time to do that, I guess.
All right. Well, it's getting a little late. I'm trying to think if there's any like last good question to ask, but I don't know if I have a last good question to ask. So Ryan, I'm just gonna thank you so much for joining us.
Of course.
Yeah, we'll at least come on again when we invite you. And thank you so much for all your reporting. Everyone should really dig in and read Ryan's reporting on all USC stuff, obviously, but certainly the basketball stuff is great to have. And this is an interesting little team. We'll see how things progress. By the way, have you heard any rumor? I guess the NCAA is now talking about allowing teams to do the foreign trip every summer. Have you heard anything about that? If there's any
No, but that
planning?
certainly seems like something that USC would wanna do. I mean,
Yeah,
that's a
absolutely.
there's so many ways too you can turn that into NIL opportunities, and you can do a lot of stuff with
Yeah,
trips like that now.
absolutely. All right, Nick, anything more from you?
Nothing from me. Thanks so much, Ryan, for coming on.
Course.
All right, until next time, everyone. Thank you, everybody. We'll be back soon.